Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here today with Hira Barbara Reed. She is a person that I've known for a very long time. She's a second degree student who lives up by Seattle, Washington. And what Barbara brings to the program today is a really wide perspective of lineage, and I was very excited when she said that she would be able to be interviewed, because some years ago, when she was excited about this book called The Seven Sisters of Eve, I think, but she'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, it's about tracking the female lines of through DNA, and she will talk to you more about that. And what happened to me was that I realized that this concept that has been now, we could say, proven or, proven isn't quite the right word, but I don't know the word I want. Proven by science is actually what a lot of people have been saying on a spiritual level. We are all one. And in this we are all one, there came to me to be a deeper understanding of what lineage meant to me and what are the aspects of lineage. So today what I'd like to do is to talk with Hira about this very basic lineage that we have and we all share as human beings. And the family lineage, a family lineage, and what that means to her and how that has made a difference in her life. And then on to spiritual lineage, and she's experienced a very strong spiritual lineage, and she'll talk more about that also. So I want to welcome you, Hira, to the show, and thank you very much for being willing to share all your experience of lineage with us.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So I like starting with how we got into Reiki. I think that's in some way a nice starting point for all of us. And all the stories are wonderfully unique and at the same time have a wonderful similarity. So how did you come to be acquainted with Reiki?
Well, actually, I was a physical therapist in the United States Army for 20 years. And just prior to my retirement was actually when I was initiated.
Uh-huh.
But I had my twin, Jean Ferris, who's a Reiki master, and I and another friend had sailed from Hawaii, my duty station, to Washington State.
Uh-huh.
And this was back in 82, and I had decided that I would try to retire in Washington, primarily up on Orcas Island. And I subscribed to the local newspaper, and there was an article about Helen Haberle and Reiki. And
uh-huh.
So I read it with great interest because I had been stationed early on in Japan, and I really related to the Japanese traditions, and I was really drawn to this article about Reiki, and I remember putting it down, saying to myself, I will be doing this, but this was in 1982, but the time is not right. And so just prior to my retirement, I pulled this article out, And I said, this is the time that I should meet this lady, Helen Haberle.
Uh-huh.
And so I went to Orcas, and I met her and talked to her, and I asked her if she was ever teaching in Tacoma, where I was living. And she said, well, actually, I'm going to be teaching in July. And so I said, well, I want to take the class. And it turned out that that was my last duty day in the clinic, in the Army. I came home and took off my white duty uniform and went to the Reiki class.
Wow.
Oh, it was amazing timing. I mean, it was divine.
Right.
I had to wait to finish this military physical therapy career, and then I could begin doing what I always knew. Jean and I both knew that there was another healing energy force in the world, and we had been working with it, but we didn't have a name for it. And so we found the name and the lineage.
Wow. That's beautiful. What a wonderful story, and a wonderful story of passage. I think that's so amazing. Wonderful. Wonderful.
So just, you know, to add to that, my Siddhi yoga lineage with Guru Mai, as my meditation master, my guru, that took place in May of that year.
Uh-huh.
So again, now in May and then in July, I have the two lineages.
Wow. That's great. Yeah.
So it was amazing timing.
Amazing. And, well, I'd like to come back to spiritual lineage as you've experienced from that time. But as you went on, I don't know, do you remember how many years ago you got into this book? Was it The Seven Sisters of Eve?
Yeah, it was The Seven Daughters.
Seven Daughters of Eve. I knew it wasn't quite right.
Byron Sykes. So that was in the early 2000s. Probably around, I actually had the mitochondrial tested in, I think it was 2005.
Uh-huh.
And
so let's go back to the book, because I remember you speaking about this with Joyce and I, and I got into this book, and it's not something that I usually am attracted to. Like, I try to stay away from, weirdly enough, I guess, books about how to make your life better and books about quantum physics and all of that. I don't really know why. I just, although I'm interested in the information, I don't like reading about it. I'm much more into other things. So, but when you started talking about this, it was at a time in my life when I don't really understand what was going on, but it just clicked with some of the things that were, I was having questions about. So I read this book, and I was really astonished by it, because it was quite, for me anyway, it took a scientific exploration and made it readable, which was amazing to me. That was the first thing. And the second thing was that it just, all these different questions that I had in my mind, through all my work with women's circles and my time with Reiki and my trying to understand the cosmology of the universe and how I, as a human being, came to be and all that, there were lots of questions that somehow, I don't know, they didn't get answered in like a black and white way, but they made sense somehow. It put things a lot into perspective, and that was really comforting for me. So I really have always appreciated your foray into this book and into the micro... Well, I can't pronounce it. But I'd like for you to explain the essence of the book, if you can, and how that was for you, and what what drew you to have your DNA tested and so on?
Well, you know, I found the book fascinating, and so, you know, I didn't start there. I started many, many years ago back. Actually, there was a question, statement that was posed to me by Gurmai back in the 80s. And so it really starts way back then. And the mother had come to India to meet Gurmai. And I was living in the ashram in India, the mother ashram, Gurudev Siddhapith. And we were bringing my mother up to meet Gurmai. And I said, I wanted my maternal mother to meet my divine mother. And she looked at me and she said, eternal mother. And I thought she had misunderstood me. And I said, no, Gurmai, I said, maternal mother. And she looked at me again and she said, I said eternal mother. So, you know, the master always poses these, like, bomb-dropping statements. It took me till 2005, when I had my mitochondrial DNA tested, that I really understood what she meant. And Jean and I talked about this. I thought, my God, what does that mean, eternal mother? That my mother, Marjorie, has been my mother throughout all of my incarnations. You know, this has happened to everybody. You know, I mean, there were just a million questions that came up. And I would contemplate that time and time again. What does this mean? So on my mother, the night before my mother died, she was, you know, in a coma, semi-comatose state, and I knew that she would die sometime during the night, and I said, can you hear me? And she didn't, she was deaf, and so her hearing aids were in her ears, of course, and she shook her head yes, and I said, I want you to know that you are my eternal mother. And tonight, you're free to go. And you will always be my eternal mother.
Wow.
So, then she departed during the night. So, here's this question, you know, again, what is the eternal mother? And so I had done years of genealogy, family genealogy. And so I just want to put this one little thing in perspective. Most families know their parents and their grandparents, and a few families have stories of their great-grandparents. And so when we're at, I didn't have a really good picture of genealogy when I started all of this. But, you know, when we go out like five generations, we're counting ourselves and then our parents, we have two parents, and then we have four grandparents, because of the maternal side and the paternal side, maternal and paternal sides. And so, but when we get out to the fifth generation, we have 16 pairs of great-great-grandparents. And then if you were to go out 20 generations, you have 500,000 great-great-grandparents.
No way! Half a million?
Half a million.
Wow.
And so
that's
then this
awesome.
Becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And so we think in terms of generations, it's about, you know, you can kind of figure it 30 years. So when we go out 28 generations, we've gone out 700 years. And there are lines, you know, families have gone back 20 generations in their family. But then when we're talking about mitochondrial DNA, we're talking about tens of thousands of years.
Right.
And if you're at tens of thousands of years, then, you know, you have multiple millions of great-great-grandparents. So then we're becoming connected to the source. And the seven daughters of Eve, it's these clans, these clan mothers. There's seven clans in Europe that that all people who are descended from Europe belong. And let me just share one more thing for people who don't know what the mitochondria DNA is.
Yeah,
the mitochondria DNA is passed from mother to child, and it goes to both the male and the female child. And the male can't pass it on because he's passing on the Y chromosome. So the mitochondria is passed from mother to daughter, mother to daughter, in these unbroken chains. And so in Europe, there are seven clans, clan mothers. And they were given names, these seven daughters of Eve, and they're given names based on the DNA configuration. And so Jean and I ended up being in the clan of Ursula. And this lineage is really the oldest lineage for unbroken chain of mitochondrial DNA. And it's over 40,000 years old. So over 40,000 years, we have the same DNA as that Ursula clan mother did. It's unbroken. It's not changed. And so then that's when I experience this tremendous oneness and this free. And to answer this long question that, you know, dug a deep hole in my being, you know, my eternal mother. All of this whole lineage of 42,000 years of great-grandmothers, that my mother was truly an eternal mother. And so I always reference this as this eternal thread of oneness. And so in Byron Sykes' book, then these seven clans eventually go to the clan mother in Africa, who's called Mitochondrial Eve. And that's the clan mother who produces all of the people in the world. So we are descended from this one mitochondrial lineage that's mutated in these different clans. And we are all one of the same.
So fascinating,
So we are all brothers and sisters. We are all, you know, basically related. And then that, you know, for me, I mean, that was this explosion that just opened my heart. You know, to everyone. And even today, as I wander throughout, you know, communities and see people on the streets, and, you know, we all have these preconceived notions about people, and then I always find myself correcting myself and saying, yeah, but that's your brother. That's your sister. And so it opens us to you know, again, this eternal thread of oneness, that we're all connected.
Uh-huh.
And then, spiritually wise, you know, from the evolution of the spirit that comes in to the human form, is that we're all made in the image of God. And so we also all share that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we are all made in the light of God. We are all that light. And we come to these spiritual lineages to rediscover that light.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We want to live in that light. We want to live in the love of the compassionate universal God.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we seek lineages to help us unravel, you know, the mystery of who we are and why we're here.
Uh-huh.
I think lineages are very important, and I think, you know, for me to find my DNA lineage was just so beautiful. You know, I mean, I almost want to cry every time I think about it.
Right, and are there not places that you can go, I assume, on the internet where those women who have found that they're from the Ursula clan, don't you have a way of connecting with each other?
Yeah, you can, you know, when you have your mitochondrial DNA tested, then a lot of people will put themselves on a database.
Oh, yeah.
And so then you can find out who these people are, and then what people are doing is then trying to connect their mitochondrial DNA to their genealogical, you know, so to find people that are related to you through your genealogical lineage.
Oh, how interesting.
So that is possible.
Wow.
And I haven't found that yet.
Uh-huh.
No, but I've found people living in Washington State, where I live, who are part of the Ursula clan.
Uh-huh.
And we have that specific mitochondrial DNA.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh,
so that's very possible. And then, you know, there's several labs that you can access and have your DNA tested, your mitochondrial DNA tested,
uh-huh.
and also the Y chromosomes if you're a male. And Byron Sykes is related with the Oxford Ancestors.com. And then the FamilyTree.com, you can have your DNA tested through them also.
Uh-huh. So at one point you were talking to me about the Y chromosome and how that comes to be. Can you repeat that again for me, actually, just so I can get it more in my head, but also for the listeners, because, you know, we talk about this mitochondrial DNA, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that it comes down through the women, and my understanding is that the mutations that happen so slowly that it's trackable through testing on science, and that's why it's been able to be so clear. And then there is this other part. Well, what happens to the men then? So I'm interested in that.
Yeah. So the men pass on their Y chromosome to their sons,
mm-hmm.
and so that, you know, they've done in Europe. In Great Britain, they've done a lot of tracking the Y chromosome to the paternal name. Like, I can go in to these records, and I can see that the Reed, R-E-I-D, spelled R-E-I-D, that they have a large database on the Y chromosome of the name
wow.
Reed. And so those have been going on, you know, for some time. And then the Y chromosome, however, they don't have a long, they have like several thousand years of tracking the Y chromosome, but the mitochondrial Eve clan mother, her mitochondria is over 200,000 years old.
Wow.
So being the Y chromosome is very early.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a very young lineage. But genealogically speaking, you know, all of the women's names are paternal names.
Right.
So there's never, it's hard to track. They didn't keep records very well on maiden names.
Right.
You know, because the women all had their husband's names.
Right.
And their maiden names were actually their father's name, which is the paternal name also. So genealogically, it's hard to, you know, maybe find some of these maiden names.
Uh-huh.
I can only go back to my third great-great-grandmother. But I can attach myself to that. You know, she had the same mitochondria that I did.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we're that whole lineage. So,
uh-huh.
That's what's so totally fascinating, is that the women finally have their day in court, so to speak. And this is the other thing that is really important. You know, when we're born, when we are incarnate on this planet, we want to be a part of a family.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people don't know their mother. They don't know who their father is.
Yes.
You know, and so, and they may not, you know, be able to track that or to find who their parents were. And so when a child has their mitochondria tested, then they are part of, they finally have found their mother, which I think it's really important. You know, they can hold on to that. They have a mother. They know what the mitochondria is. And that can bring them tremendous peace in their life that they've never been able to have.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's extremely important.
Well, yes. I mean, as I've gone through this whole process, and I started in kind of a funny way with being recognized as a part of a spiritual lineage, and then working, I call it back, I don't know, working in a different way toward, you know, then being more interested in my family lineage. And then when you introduced this book to me, then really realizing that lineage had much more to do with a very basic understanding of who I was as a human being. It's been really interesting, because I struggled a lot with what is a spiritual lineage, what is its purpose, what is my purpose in being a part of a spiritual lineage. And because in my family, I knew my mother and father. I knew my grandmothers on both my mother and father's side, but not my grandfathers. My grandfather on my mother's side died when she was a young girl. And my grandfather on my father's side died when he was a young man. So, you know, they were non-existent, basically. I don't even know their names. And I could maybe find them out, but my father never really knew his mother's maiden name because they were brought, they came over as plantation workers to Hawaii. And somehow, I don't know why, because the Japanese are very interested in lineage, but somehow that became very foggy. Once the Japanese people moved, you know, out of Japan, there's a lot of gaps in lineage, you know, because, like, physically they just moved, but somehow they also moved culture or got displaced or something for their own reasons. And, you know, when I was a kid, I was in school and we were asked to, you know, do our our family tree. And I only had these few relatives that I could say, and it made me really upset. And, you know, I didn't know how to go past that. I still don't, really. My mother is still alive, so I hear stories about my grandmother's mother, but that's, you know, as far back as we go. So it's really comforting to me to understand that I have, I wouldn't be in the same clans as you, being Oriental, I don't think. But that would be really interesting because in his book, The Seven Daughters, he also mentions that there are, I think, three or four clans from the Far East that they've tracked, and they've tracked them to not Easter Island, but some island in the South Pacific. I can't remember. Do you know anything about that?
Well, the other day I went online and looked at Byron Spikes again.
Uh-huh.
And so, and I haven't looked on that website for a long time, but he's come up, he's doing the same thing with the Seven Daughters of Eve in Europe. And so he's identified now six clan mothers in Japan.
Ah, right. Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, if you had your mitochondria tested, then that would show which clan you're actually from Japan, and, you know, you share the same mitochondria with your grandmother, of course, your maternal grandmother.
Right.
Right. Takata.
Right.
So that always interested me, and so that kind of piqued my interest that he's really updating that. And
right.
As more and more people, of course, turn their DNA in you just do send in a cheek swab, as more and more people do that, then they have their databases increasing and increasing. And so one of the things about being a clan mother, the clan mother had to have had two daughters to be a clan mother.
Uh-huh.
Or all of that statistically for the DNA to be traced back. And so I thought that was an interesting
That's
thing.
That's very interesting.
They discovered who the clan mothers were. So not everybody had two daughters.
Ah.
And it had to be...
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Oh, interesting.
And that would be interesting for you to do, I think.
Right. So I have a question that comes up, totally out of the blue. So I'm Japanese in this lifetime, but in theory, like I just had this idea that, you know, in other lifetimes I was, in other incarnations I was, you know, a European man who came over and was a Colorado mountain man, you know, in the 1800s.
Okay.
Or I was in Europe, you know, in the Middle Ages or whatever. So I wonder about the connection then. I don't know if you've thought about this, but the connection between our soul incarnations and our human incarnation, we just enter a line when we incarnate into this present life, and that gives us connection physically to our lineage, but our soul lineage is kind of perhaps what you were talking about. Our spiritual lineage has to do, am I making sense? But I'm getting mixed up in my words.
No, because our spirit, I mean, we've incarnated, you know, many, many times. I mean, we have no idea, you know, and that's the mystery of it all. We don't know how many times we've incarnated. And we all have recollections of past lives.
Right.
And they're all over the place. I mean, I know that I've been a monk many, many times, and all over the place. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I feel like I've been a monk in Japan. I've been a monk in Thailand, in India, and in Europe. So I know that my spiritual body has been around a long, long time. You know, but I incarnate in this lifetime, in this family, with this mitochondrial DNA.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. That's interesting. It's an interesting cross-connection when one says then spiritual lineage. Because, you know, number one, it's interesting for me that up to this point, the lineage that's recognized for this practice, we're all Japanese. So that's one place. But then I wonder what happens if the successor to me is actually European or some other nationality. And you know, there's a part of me that just goes, well, that can't possibly be, but if I have a successor, it's quite likely to be somebody of European descent. So that's always kind of funny for me. I don't know why I have this funny feeling. It's fascinating.
Well, I mean, you could choose someone, say, from Europe to be a successor.
Right.
And they could have had many, many lifetimes in Japan.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's we're just this big melting pot of genes and that have traveled, you know, incarnations and incarnations. And so we're just all made in the light of God.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're all the same. We're not different. You know, we are that light.
Uh-huh. So
and so that light can show up anywhere and take a form, you know, any form. But that light is still the same light.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't really matter, you know, what country someone comes from.
Uh-huh.
Because we're all that light of God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all, you know, are that eternal thread of oneness.
Well, I see that this, you know, I feel the truth in that, and I see how much for my own benefit. I don't know what the benefit has been, but I assume it's for some kind of psychological benefit, that I must hold myself as different from other people. And yet, in my longing, ever since I can remember, I've wanted to be the same as all of the people around me. You know, at first it was because I was Japanese. I was a Japanese school child in, you know, within hundreds of Caucasian school children, and I just wanted to be white. I just wanted to be Caucasian. And, you know, that's kind of an image that I have, but I wonder about a more I like to think that maybe there was a more spiritual context for that, you know, that... You know, in my feeling different, I just wanted to know somehow inside myself that we were all one.
Yeah.
You know, that was some kind of spiritual quest that I had.
I mean, that is everybody's longing, is that that we want to be part of that whole.
Uh-huh.
We want to be the same. You know, and so in Indian scriptures, you know, they say, you know, that you're created in that light of God. And so then prior to incarnating, you know, your spirit, you know, is wrapped in many veils, karmic veils, and these veils are called malas. And the more we're wrapped in that, then the more we are separated from knowing that we are God.
Uh-huh.
We are made in that light. We are that light. And so we incarnate into this lifetime. And our goal, really, in this life is to remove these veils so that we're completely being stripped through our spiritual practices so that we, our consciousness is awakening more and more. We move toward seeing the light of God, that we are that light of God. We experience God's compassionate love in every. We bring that light to everything that we do. And so we're, you know, through spiritual practices, through doing Reiki on ourselves, we are removing all of these veils of illusion that can separate it. And so that's our goal, is to be awake and be in that light of God and God's compassionate love every minute of the day throughout everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we're so fortunate, you know, that Dr. Usui spent all of those years searching for the truth and undergoing severe austerities to find the truth. He was very steadfast. He wanted to be, you know, a finder of the truth. Everybody can be a seeker. Not everybody can be a finder. So our goal in life is to really become finders of the truth, to experience that divine light that is in everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And we do this lifetime after lifetime to remove these veils so that we can really be that one, and
uh-huh.
so that we are not different from everybody else.
Uh-huh.
We are all the same. And, you know, and that's the beauty of Reiki. I mean, we have been given these beautiful symbols that just peel off these veils. Sometimes we get a glimpse of what it is, and other times all of a sudden we realize, my gosh, you know, I'm not reacting to this anymore, you know, or that memory is no longer taking hold of me. That memory is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't even realize that it was gone. It was just completely removed without any awareness on our part. And so those are the beauties of the symbols, is that they're stripping away, and just the hands-on treatment, they're stripping away all of these veils that bind us, that separate us from God.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very important to have a lineage, and, you know, because lineages are based on truth, and they're based on divine knowledge. It's not man-made knowledge. It's knowledge that comes from the universe, from God, passed down to a human form, in this case, Dr. Usui. And that knowledge then is passed to all of the people, you know, through the sacred initiation.
Mm-hmm.
To all of and then all of the lineages have teachings and practices
mm-hmm.
that we follow day in and day out
mm-hmm.
throughout our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people that are serious seekers who want to become finders, you know, they're very steadfast in their practice.
Mm.
You know, and we have to be steadfast because we've been given this incredible gift.
Right.
You know, it's a gift of a lifetime. You know, not everybody will seek out that, but for the ones who do, I mean, the gift is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes us, you know, to that light. We finally see that light in us, and then we light. We take that light and share it with many, many people around the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, in reference to this last piece that you have given us as listeners, which has been very inspiring and just sparks off a lot of trains of thought in my mind and also feelings. A question comes up then for me. It's like, I've often wondered if we recognize a spiritual lineage from a spiritual part of ourselves, that, like, for instance, a very simple thing that happens quite often in Reiki, and I would assume also happens in the Siddha Yoga. In Siddha Yoga, it actually has, because I know a couple of people who have given this as an example of how they've heard, like, they've just heard the name Guru Mai, and they know that they have to meet her, and they have to go to her, and you know, and she has a gift for them, or she is their connection, or, you know, people hear the word Reiki, and they don't know what it's about, they just know that they have to do it, quite a bit like you, except that quite often people are not, they don't take, you know, their timing isn't the same. They do it quite often immediately. And I'm just wondering what the connection is between the seekers, as you put it, and finding the spiritual lineage that somehow matches you, or that speaks to you, or perhaps that is already in place in you.
Mm-hmm. You know, for myself, I go back to Japan.
Uh-huh.
And when I was stationed there, and my first Christmas, I went to Kyoto. And I was staying in this kind of Western hotel, and I reached in, and I pull out, you know, instead of the Gideon Bible, in English, it's a book called The Teachings of Buddha. And I read that, and I have a spiritual awakening. My God, this is the first time I've read anything that makes sense to me.
Uh-huh.
And so while I was in Japan, I took Hatha Yoga from an Indian man who was part of the Sevananda Divine Life Society.
Oh, yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
So he came from Tokyo, and every week, and a bunch of us nurses and therapists went down and took Hatha Yoga from him. And so when I was getting ready to be transferred to Vietnam, I took my last class, I took him to the train station, and he gets out of the car and he leans back in and he says, Kundalini Yoga is the most powerful yoga of all, and you should never attempt it until you have your guru. and he shuts the door. And I'm just sitting there, and I thought, what in the world is Kundalini yoga?
Uh-huh.
And to have a guru, and, you know, and so that was in 1969 that he told me that.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't until 1985 that I meet Guru Mai.
Uh-huh.
But during that whole time, I'm studying yoga, and I'm doing, you know, spiritual practices on my own, and I go in and I'm initiated in TM, and I have this longing, you know, ever since he spoke that. I'm in my 20s when he tells me this, that I want to live in an ashram, I want to have a guru, and it's years and years and years go by until I finish my military career that I find Guru Mai.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember saying to her, Guru Mai, I had to search and I had to wait so long. I had this longing for so many years because at the time I had this omen, you were only 12 years old. I had to wait for you to grow up
uh-huh.
and become the guru. So, you know, everybody's course is different. You know, we sometimes it takes years and years of seeking.
Right.
You know, before we find our master.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always said, when you're ready, the master will appear.
Right.
So it's different, you know, for everybody. I mean, a lot of people come to Reiki, and they have no idea. You know, their friend has drugged them there.
Right.
you know, they come sometimes kicking and screaming, but their friend is God's messenger, you know.
Right.
They're bringing the message to that person. Whereas the person may not have been awake enough to know that that was the time for them to have the teaching. So it's, you know, it comes in so many forms. In so many ways.
Well, Hira, I feel like I have received a teaching today through you. And I'm a little bit stunned, but also am so grateful for your willingness to share yourself.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's just been a wonderful thing to contemplate all of this and revisit all of these important milestones in my life. It's been very wonderful. I'm really appreciative of you asking.
Oh, I'm sure that I speak for my listeners also, that it's been a pleasure, and it's some way it's too bad that it's the time for us to end, and on the other hand, I have a lot to contemplate and
well,
to use. Yeah, and I really encourage you listeners to, when you're doing your self-treatment, to just keep in mind this connection that we have that is the very foundation of our physical being. We are connected, we are one, and it's not just what I thought 30 years ago when I got into Reiki, you know, I got into the New Age thing, we are all one, and I would just roll my eyes and go, well, it's a nice thought, but forget it. And now, of course, I've had the experience through my Reiki practice of knowing deep inside that we are one, but it's underlined considerably for me when I know that, you know, from the very cellular part of our bodies, the physical part, we are one. And that it, as Hira has said, that it can change how we hold each other, I hope, with more compassion and more willingness to be brothers and sisters and to hold ourselves in that way. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.